Hello, Internet. This is Ewan Spence calling. Yes, the contest may be over, but another one is still underway. Ultimate Jukebox Jury. Do you remember that? So here we go once again. It's about 346 days to the next Eurovision Song Contest final. Seemingly there's no scheduling or anything. Welcome to Ultimate Jukebox Jury. I'm Ewan Spence in our continuing quest here at ESE Insight to find the greatest winning or almost winning song of Eurovision of all time. We're still in heats. It's heat 12. Two of our judges have recovered from the stress of the Stefan Raab show in Germany and are here to cast their mind over four Eurovision hits. From the United Kingdom, from Switzerland, from Russia and from France, they will decide whether the songs are hit, misses or maybes, and from that we'll work out which is the winner of this heat. They will go forward into semi-finals happening over the summer. The other three will disappear off into the iPod in the sky. First up, the man who has decided that Baku is on for next year, and he's pointing every single particle accelerator he can find towards the runway to make sure that it's relatively clear for a nice, well-sized, modern plane. Andrew Main, welcome back from Dusseldorf.
Thank you, Ewan. Thanks for having me on again.
Well, you know, it's a tricky one now, because we're in that sort of, somebody once described it as PED, post-Eurovision depression.
I have to say there's been quite a few people who seem to have had this PED, but I'm not one of them, to be honest. I came back and went straight into work mode and straight into bowling mode, which is what I do in the summer months here. And I'm just enjoying life. I'm enjoying the summer, even though we've only had one day of sunshine. But no, I haven't had any depression.
There we go. Speaking of depression, it set in after the first semi-final for our second judge. Norway crashing and burning. African music doesn't really win at any point in Eurovision. But he's managed to pull himself back together. He's back on an emotional level keel, at least for the next 25 minutes or so. It's David L. Hello, David.
Hello, Ewan. Yes, Afro Schlager sadly didn't work this year for Stella Mwangi. But you know what? I think we haven't heard the last of her. I hope she comes back next year. But listen, I've got a question for you, Ewan, which is really burning away at me, because I need to know the answer to this. Obviously, we have a classic, classic, fabulous Eurovision winner from this year in the shape of Azerbaijan. And I'm wondering where that's going to figure in our Ultimate Jukebox Juries.
That's interesting, because you know, when we look back at the original seedings that were done, Azerbaijan's not there. The 64 were made up from all the winners. The ones that got into tied in first place, specifically 1969 and 1991, of which two are popping up tonight. And we got a couple of wild cards in as well. So Azerbaijan actually doesn't figure in any of this. I suspect what we'll have to do is run the whole Ultimate Jukebox Jury Mark II starting in October, but then putting in Azerbaijan. You know, at the moment, I haven't decided what happens when Ultimate Jukebox Jury ends. So working out what happens, but oh, we've got another winner to put in. I don't know. Maybe we give them a sudden death. Those are questions for a later date. We're at four songs in our Ultimate Jukebox Jury. And remember, you can leave your comments and thoughts on the decisions of the judges and myself back on the website, www.eseinsight.com, and Facebook and Twitter, Hurdle Pile and all of that. Let's start. We've just had the most recent winner, obviously, from Azerbaijan. Let's go right back. Let's go back to 1956. Let's go back to the very first Eurovision winning song of all time. Let's go back to the very first voting controversy of all time. Let's go back to Liz Assia, Refrain.
Refrain, couleur de pluie, regret de mes 20 ans. Chagrin, mélancolie, de n'être plus enfant. T'es loin de toi, par les chemins où tu n'es pas, je rêve l'avant.
Right then, now just to remind you, all judges checked, we're still in the first round. That doesn't mean that these songs have already been put through by Paul Jordan. It means that we're still finding. We've got 12, 13, 14, we've got 16 in the first heats. Right then, Liz Assia. We've no idea who came second. We've no idea who managed the scores in the 1956 contest. My favourite bit of this is you had to send the jury to the show. Luxembourg didn't send a jury, so the EBU said, oh, that's all right, the Swiss jury can vote for you. And then Switzerland go and win. I mean, that is the greatest fix of all time, isn't it, Andrew?
Absolutely. I mean, you wouldn't be allowed to fix the contest in such a degree in this day and age.
Certainly. You know, it was so blatant back in those days. It was right in front of you. Not going to happen. Right then, let's actually judge the song, though. And Refrain is... Well, again, we come back to this issue of how do you judge a song from the 50s? And, you know, some and the thing is, I don't think it actually matters. I think you can tell a good quality song, and this really isn't it, is it, David?
Do you know what? It's not a bad song. I don't mind listening to this maybe once every 5 years. It's of its time. It's a mid-50s song. It's the sort of thing you might have heard in a Doris Day film when she was wearing a lovely pencil slim skirt and a lovely bobbed blonde hairdo. Kind of song that it was. And of its time, it's fine. But you're right. It's really difficult to compare that to something like Azerbaijan, which has just won a couple of weeks ago, because they're hugely, hugely different. I say it's not a song I would listen to a lot. And for that reason, I probably find it difficult to say that it's going to be a hit. But I don't know. See what Andrew thinks.
Well, you know, I probably haven't listened to Refrain for quite a number of years, but because you give us a heads up as to what's coming on the show tonight, I went off into YouTube and had a look back at the performances and such like. Now, this one surprised me immensely because I was expecting to hate it because it was dated and a 1950s style song. But in actual fact, I found myself really enjoying the performance when I watched it back. And to be honest, it's not usually my cup of tea, but I just found the song, the performance of the song back in the 1956 contest was really, really good. It's difficult, as David said, to try and compare it to a lot of the more recent Eurovision hits, as in terms of a hit or whether it's a miss or a maybe. But I have to say, I was mildly surprised. I really enjoyed it.
Can I just ask, I might have been asleep, but did I miss the annual wheeling out of Lysacia in Dusseldorf this year?
Yes, you did. She appeared at a couple of the parties, especially in the second week. No, she wasn't in the show.
They've got to keep her batteries good to get to Baku next year. You know, for me, I think you can judge songs from the 50s. I think you can certainly listen back to them. I mean, Volare, here's a classic example. Domenico's song still works nowadays. This doesn't. So you can, you know, a good quality song will shine through. This doesn't shine through. I mean, it's really great because when you go, let's listen to all the songs from Eurovision, you get this lovely crescendo, this lovely opening. It's almost like it was selected to be the opening track on every compilation album for hundreds of years. And in that respect, it's a good song. But in terms of music of its time, in terms of Eurovision song, I really don't place this very highly. For me, this is a clear miss. It doesn't have any sort of staying power. It doesn't have any sort of hook or remembrance me. Cory Brockin's song the following year is actually far better representation, I think, of the 50s than Liz's.
I think I'm going to give her a maybe because it does have a sort of 50s vibe to it that is quite sweet. I mean, it's as I say, it's difficult to judge it, but I'll stick with maybe.
I'm also going to say a maybe for this one because it surprised me quite a lot having listened back to it. It really uses the medium of the orchestra, which was, of course, very much part of the contest. And I think I can see why it won at the time. It doesn't stand up with the more current songs, but for the fact that it did so well back then, I'll give it a maybe.
There we go. Two maybes and a miss from me and the judges. Right, let's scoot forward to 2008. This was the year that Russia decided we want to win the song contest. And win it, they did. Dima Bilan, the MTV pinup of whatever MTV is in Russia and the surrounding countries. 2008 contest was a number of firsts. It was the first to be streamed out on Eurovision.tv. It was the first to have two semi-finals. And it was the first of Russia's so far only victories, Dima Bilan and Believe. Yes, I get something to believe in. As long as I'm breathing, there is not a limit to what I can dream. Yes, I get something to believe in. Fatima Balan there, of course, his second go at Eurovision. He'd entered in 2006 with a song which, in my opinion, was better than this one. But he came up against Lordi, and Lordi's a far better song than Dima Bilan. Never Let You Go was 2006, but we're talking about Believe specifically here, although we can judge Dima as a person if we so wish, because judges have a whim like that. Who'd like to put the boot? Who'd like to judge this one first? David!
Me! You talked about first there, Ewan. There was a first about this song for me as well. It's the first time I saw an audience get up and leave before a winning song had been reprised in the contest. I remember there were about five of us sat together in the audience, and as soon as it was obvious that Russia had won, everybody got up en masse and left and had no interest whatsoever in hearing the song again. For me, I think we always knew that Dima was likely to win that contest because he was the hot favourite. I know there was a lot of backing behind it. It had the Timberland production, all the rest of it. But for me, it's one of my most all-time hated Eurovision songs. I find everything about it vile, abhorrent and repulsive. I didn't like it.
Andrew?
Well, you were talking about firsts. Everybody's talking about firsts here. And this was the first time in the 2000s that I didn't actually go to Eurovision. So I had the great fortune of watching it on my TV screens back in the living room. And I have to say, having been to Eurovision for the last previous 8 years or something like that, I thought I would actually hate being at home and I would hate everything about the contest. But I thoroughly enjoyed the TV programme. I hated the winner. And this was the winner. Now, it's nothing to do with Dima Bilan, because I...
That's good, because I think David's covered that quite succinctly.
Because I didn't see all this goings-on behind the scenes, of course, not being there that year. Dima Bilan's first one, I really enjoyed his first attempt at Eurovision, so I was kind of hoping for something along the same lines, and I must say I was sadly disappointed, because I felt Believe was trumped up, it was conceited, and it was just doing its utmost to win. And it was shown on the TV screen with the skater, with the fiddle, everything about it, I just felt...
It was a Stradivarius violin, it wasn't just a fiddle.
It was a fiddle on the TV, and the whole thing was a fiddle.
Look, I set that up. We were just going to leave it as a quiet, lingering joke for the listener, but no. There we go. Well, you know, is this the point where I come in and say something nice about the song? No. And mostly because of the most overblown video I have seen of any Eurovision song. Honestly, I mean, if you go back and have a look at this on YouTube, the video for Believe makes Touched Like an Angel look like a Quentin Tarantino film. I mean, it was just dripping with whatever pathos is in Russian. For me, this was a song that didn't raise any emotion in me. It was a song that was... felt predestined to win, and it's a song that defeated Annie Lorak. So on an emotional level, on an instinctual level, and on a sheer pettiness level, for me it's a miss. David, is there any bother?
It's actually a miss for me.
Andrew?
Yeah, I'm going to go the same way. It's a miss for me as well.
What a shock. Three misses for Dima. There we go. And look, judges aren't meant to be proud and applaud when somebody gets three X's. I mean, it's like the X... It's not the X factor. It's like Britain's Got Talent. We've got three X's up there. He has to stop now, which would be nice. Okay, if you've got any comments or want to get involved, www.eseinsight.com. We're at the halfway mark. It's quite low scoring so far. Two maybes. If you can beat that, you've got a good chance. And coming up in third place is a song that actually finished second. France's song in 1991, which of course was defeated by...
Carola.
There we go. Amina, tied for scoring. Because in 1969 they didn't have a scoring system in place, they did a count back in 12s, they were equal. Count back in 10s, Carola had more 10s than Amina. So Sweden would have taken it. Interestingly, if we'd used the tie breaks that we have this year, who would have won, David?
France.
Because, first of all, we now count how many countries actually voted for you. So, because of that, and because we had to make the numbers up to 64, and we didn't know that as there was the ultimate jukebox who was going to run this long, France has got a slot inside UJPJ as well. Le Dernier qui a parlé, the last one who spoke, is going to be our song now from Amina.
Dis-moi au nom de quelle nation tu lèves le ton dans ma maison. Ne gémis pas comme un violon sans partition. C'est
le sang. La vérité se cache le front comme un silence qui en dit long. C'est le plus fort qui a parlé, qui a raison. De toute façon,
that was Amina and Abby with Le Dernier qui a parlé, qui a raison.
Thank you. Always get somebody else who can speak the language to introduce the awkward name songs. David, do you like your chanson? Do you like this one?
I do. I think this is a great song. Sadly for Amina, though, she was beaten by one of the best Eurovision winners ever, but we'll not talk about that just now. This was a great, great song and has stood the test of time. It's still, you know, when we go to conventions or at Eurovision itself, where we're at parties and things and this comes on, everybody's just rapturous about it. They absolutely love the song. I mean, the way she sung the song was, we were just chatting about that, really, really interesting. She was very sensual in her performance. And she still sings it to this day. I saw her a couple of years ago at a Pride event in Stockholm, and she was a special guest, and she came on, and she sung it. And the atmosphere was electric when she did it. Absolutely brilliant.
Well, I find I'm going to have to disagree with David here, because this song was not beaten by the best Eurovision song of all time, because I felt that this song was by far and away superior to Carola's attempt in 1991. I didn't dislike Carola, but I absolutely love this song. This, for me, is classic Eurovision at its best. It's one of my all-time favourite songs ever, and not just Eurovision.
Thankfully, I'm controlling the microphone because I'm about to roll a little grenade into this one. I'm not that particularly fond of this one. It's a little bit waily, for want of a better word. It's got a great, you know, the first minute of it is really nice. And then the second minute of it, you know, it's what will soon be known as the Jedward effect. The second minute sounds like the first minute. And then you go on to the third minute, which sounds like the second minute, which sounds like the first minute. And it's just this waily, early 90s avant-garde, handy waving, a little bit of pretend African rhythm in the background. You know, nowadays that doesn't even get out the semi-finals, does it, David?
No, it doesn't.
So, exactly. So, you know, to say, I think this is the interesting point, because obviously every judge has their own opinion and has their own favourites and disfavourites, and we have tried to kind of keep them away so people aren't judging their favourites, but it's almost impossible to do with all of that, which is why we have more than one judge. You know, for me, it's too plinky plonk. For me, it's not even Eurovision by numbers. This is the sort of thing that Eurotrash with Antoine Decaul and the guy who did the fashion designer for Dan International's dresses this year at Eurovision.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it's not Eurovision by numbers, Ewan. And Carola absolutely was. I understand where Andrew's coming from. I think I'm probably very much in the minority, being happy with a song that did win that year, because I think the majority of people would much have preferred Amina to win. But it wasn't Eurovision by numbers, and I think that's why it's so special.
Yes, but at the same time, I'd prefer something that was a little bit more interesting.
I don't think you can get much more interesting than that. The intonation of her voice, the sexy, sensual performance of it, you know, just amazing.
I can see why it's different, but there's just no appeal for me. It's repetitive, it's waily, it's blinky plonky. For me, it is a miss.
It's a hit for me.
And it's a hit for me.
And that's why we have three judges taking the lead there. We have Amina, her second place, which might have been a first, is now putting her in potentially first or a second place, depending on our last song. Home Ground Advantage is now going to go to Lulu, United Kingdom's winner from 1969. Of course, one of four winners from 1969, because they didn't have a tiebreaker resolution in those years. So they went, oh, we've got four medals here because we were going to give them to the songwriters. Nope, we'll give one to each singer instead. Boom, bang, a bang for the United Kingdom, took the prize in Spain. Along with Spain and France and the Netherlands.
Come closer and cuddle me tight. My heart goes boom, bang, a bang, boom, bang, a bang when you are near. Boom, bang, a bang, boom, bang, a bang loud in my ear. Pounding away, pounding away, won't you be mine? Boom, bang, a bang, bang all the time. It's such a lovely feeling when I'm in your. Thank you.
Lulu there, 1969. Now, interestingly, this is one of the few Eurovision songs to be banned by the BBC.
Is it? I didn't know that.
Yes, it was banned. You weren't allowed to play this during the 1991 invasion of Iraq on the radio because it had the word boom in it.
That is hilarious. That really is funny.
So there we go. Another first for a Eurovision song. But where does it rank in terms of our judges' opinions? Let's turn to Andrew on this one first.
Okay. Again, it's a very dated song. It's very 1960s, but in a good way for me. I wasn't sure about it before. So, again, I had a little sneak look at the performance on YouTube the other day, and I have to say, it was very quirky of its time. Lulu did a really brilliant performance that night. She had really weird hair, I have to say, but that's not unusual in Eurovision circles. Weird hair does seem to work sometimes. It surprised me again. I found that I was enjoying the performance back, and I was enjoying the song as well.
1969, of course, Lulu wasn't really a big top 10 chart hitter at that point. She was sort of in the BBC's light entertainment repertoire. She was essentially, and I hate to say this, she was the John Barrowman of their day, but actually managed to pull out a very good Eurovision song. I'm not quite sure John would manage nowadays. For me, it's an interesting because she's much more passionate in the song, and she kept it as one of her favourite songs, although it's now been shown that it was actually her husband at the time, one of the Bee Gees. You know, go on, sing it, that's the one. And it kept her name in the press, and it meant she could do things like Take That. And she likes the song now. She seemed to like it then, and that was the important thing. We always say that Eurovision is many things, but it is your 3 minutes on stage, and anything can happen. You can have a stage invasion. You can have Stefan Raab's voice-over IP system blow out the commentary booth system, so you have to do it with no commentary, in which case, if you're the only person doing sign language, you win. It's just nice and happy.
A pink mini dress with big white flowers on it and the lyrics boom bang a bang. Oh my God, is this what Eurovision is about? I love it. I think it's brilliant. I mean, I think for me, as I say, this is kind of your real kind of archetypal Eurovision stuff. But as Andrew said, she delivered it with such style and so much fun and joy about it. You know, yeah, there were four winners that year, and I love the Spanish song as well that year that won, but I think Lulu was probably the best out of the four winners. Again, that's probably a bit controversial because I know a lot of people love Frida Baccara, but for me, Lulu's performance was amazing in Madrid, and I think it's one of the all-time classics for me.
For me, I'm going to put this one down as a hit. It is one of the few songs from the UK winners that I will listen to again and again. I really can just ignore Bucks Fizz quite happily most of the time. And Annie Shaw, yeah, she sung Puppet on a String, but she didn't perform it. You know, Lulu actually performed it. So for me, it's going down as a hit.
For me, it's going to be a big hit too.
Only have a hit once, but there we go. Andrew. It all rests on this vote, by the way. You know, you could send anybody through you like, or we could have to draft in a lane as a tiebreaker. So, a lot of responsibility here, Andrew.
Yes, that's why I was looking at your little bit of paper before I made my decision.
And that's why I've covered up the scores.
But luckily I managed to see it before you covered up the scores. However, it's not going to sway my actual decision. For me, Lulu was a great, quirky performance. It was a 60s song. It sounded like a 60s song, but it was a great 60s song, and it's a hit for me.
There we go. It is a full house for Lulu. Scottish winner, yeah, there we go. Taking three hits, so we don't need our tiebreaker. We will just move on. Lulu moves into the next round. Liz Assia joins Dima Bilan and Amina in wherever they feel the need to, probably a nursing home at some point. But there you go. www.eseinsight.com for you to leave your comments. I'm Ewan Spence. Thank you to the judges, David Elder.
Thank you very much.
Andrew Main.
Thank you. Pleasure.
And thank you all out there for listening as well. We'll be back next week with the fortnightly news, and then the week after that we'll have more Jukebox Jury. For now, thank you very much for listening. The summer months are still Eurovision. Honestly, Elaine, you've been sitting there for half an hour. Do you want to say something?
Hiya.
Actually, no. I was kind of hoping you'd do the thing we do at the end of every show.
Electric guitars!